The only reason to watch NFL football, and Roger Goodell knows this, otherwise he wouldn't have sold his soul to DraftKings and FanDuel and any organization that he can connect himself with in the NFL. Right? Remember they used to laugh at this. They used to make the Greek come on and pretend like he wasn't talking about betting money on a game. He would say to Phyllis George, well, if you were inclined to take an interest in this game. It's like, what are you talking about, Greek? You're sending it in with both fists. We know that. The point spread is the only important thing. It was taboo to mention gambling in any form,
any way,
connected with the National Football League. And now every betting slob is welcome for a free lunch at Goodell's house. All you have to do is show a losing ticket from some casino. Yeah, come on in, Lou. How much did you lose? Well, that's too bad. I tell you what, we got another full slate of games coming up this week, and I got just the pick for you. Goodell will be touting games pretty soon on FanDuel.
Honestly.
That'll be great. This week, I really like Cleveland with the points against Kansas City.
Like the commission's takes, and then you'd go to Roger Goodell in that room he did the draft from 2 years ago.
Yeah. He's buried in the basement there with, like, the gold sheet. Pouring over stats and sabermetrics. The agent to the stars, Brett Tesser, welcome to the show. How excited do you get? And there's still, I guess, you know, I'm watching a crawl last night, and I'm thinking, look at all these guys being announced as out for the season. Still some maneuvering to be made before the season even gets underway around the National Football League. Has your phone been ringing, my friend?
My phone's not ringing because all my players are pretty much squared away. I'm abnormally excited. In fact, I'm heading up to Tampa tomorrow. I represent a linebacker on the Cowboys and a guy on the Bucks. It's going to be great to be there for the opening game for sure.
You going to do one of those deals and wear like a half a Bucks and half a Cowboys jersey to the game?
No, I'm going to do like Don King. I'm going to leave with whoever wins.
Only Steve Smoger, the referee, he was known as Let Him Bleed. Remember that guy, Steve Smoger? Refed a lot of big fights.
Let Him Bleed.
Let Him Bleed, Steve Smoger.
Most of your references, nobody knows what you
only he would have, you know, maintained the contention that the Marlins were still alive in 1971.
That was his motto, Let Him Bleed.
Let Him Bleed, yes.
What is he, Ivan Drago?
Paramedics were attending to the guy in the corner. Hey, one more round, kid.
Let Him Bleed.
Let Him
one
Bleed. More
round. I mean,
a lot of people like that, though. They think it should be a fight to the finish.
Oh, Jesus.
They have that whole gladiator mentality about boxing and any kind of blood sport like that.
The time.
Wake up with Defo, joined by Luby. Welcome to The Defo Show.
A happy day.
Happy day.
When Jesus wore,
when Jesus wore. You kvetch about everything, Luby. You're just ridiculous. You know what? I was all psyched up for the beginning of the show today, and then you started talking to me off the air about all the things that you're complaining about.
This and that and that and this and that. Ba-ba, ba-boom, ba-boom.
You're just down on everything. Down. Negative. I don't know. Is it marriage? Is that starting to crumble, too? What's going on?
My marriage is good. Right? The sports weekend was very frustrating. It was good that the Dolphins did get a win. And
it was
and
like
and
a brilliant sports weekend.
I've been told.
What are you talking about? There were so many great things that happened, and you're here kvetching about a loss to Jackson State?
Jacksonville State. At least Jackson State was Jacksonville
Dion, State.
So you could have
not even Jackson State.
It was
Jacksonville State. Wow, teams with hyphens and colons.
Yes, very directional.
Colon would be the key reference there around all we're talking about. A little bit of punctuation. All right, welcome to the show. It's the ALT Defo Show presented by Destination Sport Miami. Great to be with you. Appeal yourself off the mat Monday. Did they stop that fight in the parking lot, Luby? Is that still going on? Can you peek out the window there? Don't bother like the people on IOD if you have to look out the window to the parking lot. I haven't been at a station for a long time. They might have even moved the parking lot by now. They might have paved over it. Who knows? Can you pave over a parking lot and put up a park? The old Joni Mitchell universe?
Yet, no, it's still here.
I understand it was just a mass disturbance in the parking lot this morning. Somebody called me early this morning. Castronova, I think, was on to it. And he said, who is this guy that's yelling and screaming that he belongs on the air and he has a show to do and they wouldn't let him in? And sure enough, it was Godfrey Lovejoy.
I don't believe
is allowed in the building anymore. I mean, he's very upset about that fumble at the end of the Patriot game where Xavien Howard came in and saved the Dolphins once again. As it looked like the New England Patriots were driving in for what would have been a winning score and or at least a go-ahead field goal in that ball game. But unfortunately for the Patriots and their fans, That went up in smoke with that fumble, and the Dolphins were able to execute the necessary first down. Patriots had to waste all of their timeouts and the two-minute warning, and then it was on to game number two. And the Buffalo Bills, who come to town as a road favorite against the Miami Dolphins, coming up this week. So the Dolphins go to 1-0. We'll dissect that game in great detail with John Congemi, brought to you by Jimmy Johnson's Big Chill, Key Largo. John Congemi will have Dateline Dolphins in the 9 o'clock hour, and Jason Cole later on the overall spectrum of NFL football, which was fascinating. Now, I don't know that I'm ready to anoint Tua Tagovailoa as the savior of the franchise just yet.
No.
It does seem like, and it was a Devontae Parker sighting, and yes, when that kid is on, wow, what an asset he could be.
That
huh?
catch he made in that last drive, you talked about running, but they actually had to make a couple passes. That catch he made kept that drive going, and I was like, thank goodness the guy that was a first-round pick who played really well 2 years ago showed up.
Jalen Waddle looked okay in the ball game. He had one pass. It was questionable. The announcers were all over him. Oh, yeah, he should have caught that ball. Now, I know these guys played football. I think the color analyst was Trent Green, so at least he was in the league, would have some perspective on that. But I get a little upset with the idea that every ball that is anywhere near the guy should be caught. I know that was an old adage in football, and you tried to have that in your head if you were playing a game at any level, even if you were just playing recreationally, that if you can get a hand on the ball, you should catch it.
Yes.
Do you believe that, Mike Lubey-Lubitz, 100%. That if you can get a hand on the ball, but if you're making a circus move to get a hand on the ball,
I mean, look,
and you can only get like a fingertip on it.
And you get a fingertip on it, that's not the same thing. I mean, like, if you can get a full hand on it, then to me, you should be able to get two hands on it and catch it.
For my money, that was a somewhat lousy pass by Tua. That one that Jalen Waddle dropped that they were all over him on. But nice showing by Jalen Waddle, number one overall pick. So you had a couple of first-round picks, or first-round pick of the Dolphins, not number one overall. But many people thought he could have been, and it looked like the Dolphins have themselves a new offensive weapon. They still have... Can I get a sound effect here, Louie?
Oh, yeah.
They still have a problem with the offensive line.
Yes,
do
yes,
they
do.
Not?
Offensive line not good. And secondary, which is supposed to be the strength. It's interesting. The defensive line was supposed to be a weak point. The defensive line got the whole second half was terrorizing Mac Jones. The problem is receivers were running wide open in less than 3 seconds because outside of Xavier and Howard, their secondary is abysmal. Oof. And that's not a good receiving core that they were letting run free yesterday.
You and I are diametrically opposed on this one, just because you'll never admit that you were dead wrong in the first place.
I don't think he sucks.
I think this Mac Jones is going to be good.
I
think he's going to be fine.
He's an NFL starting quarterback. I didn't think he was. I thought he was a career backup, and I'm already wrong in that regard. The dude is poised.
Oh, good. All right.
He's comfortable. He was getting barraged back there. He didn't throw any interceptions. He didn't make any dumb passes. People were calling him great. He didn't look great to me. When you're throwing wide-open receivers, you should hit them. Like, that's...
He looked great in the sense that this was his very first game.
Yes.
That, you know, you didn't know if he was even going to be the starter. I thought, and I said this after the first preseason game when you were screaming, yeah, he sucks, he sucks, he sucks. I said this after the very first preseason game. It was another one of those moments that we've had on the program before. And, you know, you look at a guy and you just say, my God, that guy looks like he really has it. And sure enough, Mac Jones, and you thought that Belichick thought he had secured the next Tom Brady. And he looked very Brady-esque for the early stages of his career. I thought he held up very well and made a great showing. And probably of the two guys, I would have to say he looked like the more professional quarterback of the two, did he not? Tua Tagovailoa had his moments, good moments, although that first pass was bozoic. Imagine that was the guy's first pass in the big leagues. First pass in the NFL, Mac Jones, where they had handed the ball off a couple of times. They were shredding the Dolphins' defensive front with the running game early in the contest, although it didn't really get them that far. And then he finally was in a position where he was going to have to pass the ball, and he turned around and threw it backwards. Did you catch that early in the game,
no,
Mac Jones?
The beginning.
I mean, just a bozo play. Wow. And you thought, oh, geez, Belichick's got to be fuming, wondering why he let Cam Newton go and cut him loose. And sure enough, the kid rebounded, had a real good ball game. So the Dolphins go to 1-0. They were an underdog in this ball game. We did think that the Dolphins were a pretty good play, that the Patriots were overrated. Everybody was raving about all the moves they made in the offseason. They didn't make enough moves offensively to score more than 16 points on a Dolphin defense that Luby says the secondary should have been shredded by any real quarterback. So you have to be satisfied, obviously, that you took a road win over a division rival. The Dolphins, the only team in the AFC East with a winning record right now, as the Jets lost. And the Buffalo Bills, are you buying it? The Buffalo Bills are going to the Super Bowl after that second half against Pittsburgh?
Allen didn't look
so swift. Did not look so great.
Be so bad. Like Allen looked a lot more mortal than people wanted him to be.
Yeah, he was throwing a ball all over the place. Looked like it had a gyroscope in it. And it was a nice day in Buffalo, which is rare. That was their one nice day of the 365 of 2021, the one nice weather day. And this kid couldn't throw the ball anywhere near his receivers. He badly overthrew a guy who was open by 10 yards early in the ball game, and then later on, when they needed him to make a couple of clutch passes, he was throwing them high and wide. And it was very indicative of what he did in his first year when people thought he was going to be a bust. So rebounded nicely, had a great year last year. The Buffalo Bills, it's only one game of 17 now. You have to keep that in mind. One game of 17. But nonetheless, if you were buying into the Buffalo Bills being a Super Bowl champion and a Super Bowl contender, they probably will be a contender, but did not look to me like a Super Bowl championship team, at least coming out of the chute there in game number one, on their home field against a Pittsburgh team that was held scoreless in the first half. Think about that, Luby.
Yep.
And they come back and lose that ball game. A lot of good games around the National Football League yesterday. A couple of surprises and a couple of interesting developments. Pittsburgh over Buffalo, of course, was one. And you mentioned, and I knew you would get to this very early, but you know, and this was another one of our predictions here on the show, that the Jameis Winston acquisition by the New Orleans Saints, with Drew Brees either going to play one or two more years, which it turned out to be one. Actually, he kind of only really played like three quarters of the year, and the rest of the time he was just out there. But nonetheless, the Jameis Winston acquisition was going to be an interesting one. And then when they gave Hill all of that money, you thought, well, what on earth are they thinking there in New Orleans? They're going to start this guy Taysom Hill over Jameis Winston? And Winston was the standout quarterback. I mean, they kept making this allusion, any postscript on the game, that if you said one quarterback in this game was going to have five touchdowns and no interceptions and look like a champion, and the other guy was eventually going to get benched for a second-year starter that created a lot of controversy, a second-year quarterback that created a lot of controversy when he was drafted, you would have said, surely it was Jameis that was going to be on the Pines, and Aaron Rodgers was going to be the guy that shined. But so much for all that wasted conversation about where Rodgers was going to end up. He ended up on the bench, Luby, on the freaking bench. Aaron Rodgers, last year's MVP. As the Green Bay Packers mustered up a grand total of 3 points against the New Orleans Saints. I believe the Saints were a home dog in this game. And Jameis Winston shined with five touchdown passes, looked brilliant all the way through. And that was a great win for the New Orleans Saints as they had to play the game. I guess they were a home dog. Technically, they were the home team, but they played a game in Jacksonville because of all the different things. And is this area getting slammed again, Luby? Not to delve into a weather report here, but another tropical storm hitting the same spot? Global warming? Coincidence? I mean, what the hell is going on there,
Luby? I don't know. You're better with the weather.
You got more schmutz heading through there. Oh, my God. It's ugly. Cleveland KC, one of the marquee games of the day. Cleveland, unfortunately, on a special teams play, trying to punt the football. The punter drops the snap and then goes Gazzara and starts running for his life. KC tackles the guy for a huge loss, gets the ball deep in Cleveland territory, goes in for the score, and goes on to win the ball game. Kansas City Chiefs, you can never count them out. And they come back from, what were they down, like 9 points in that game? Cleveland was on top most of the way, and Kansas City came back. Patrick Mahomes looking real good. Tyreek Hill. Hard to make comparisons of Waddle to Tyreek Hill, isn't it?
Yes.
At this stage. I mean, it's almost unfair to the kid because Tyreek Hill is a game changer anytime he steps on the field. The Rams with Matthew Stafford looked a lot better, did they
yes,
not? Pretty
yes.
tight ball game. Rams played last night, and you have the Ravens and the Raiders tonight. Ravens and the Raiders going at it tonight. So interesting start to the NFL week. It all began with the Buccaneers over the Cowboys in a thriller in Manila type game. And the Miami Dolphins come home 1-0 to face the Buffalo Bills, who will be upside down in the standings there from what everybody thought it was going to be, as the Bills will come in at 0-1 after sustaining an improbable loss in the minds of most against the Pittsburgh Steelers. College football over the weekend. Wow, what can you say? You want to cry first about your Jacksonville State game? Now you hate Mike Norvell. You thought he was great.
I was really hoping to not talk about it.
Well, you have to, Luby, because this is what you wear on your sleeve here on the show. And I know you want to fetch about the thing, but that had to be a shocker, that this big moral victory, and everybody's talking. I even bought into it, that Norvell was on the right track and how great that was against Notre Dame. Turns out Notre Dame is vastly overrated after barely getting by, what was that, Toledo. They win by three, so maybe that's an indicator that they didn't necessarily beat much when they beat Florida State, and Florida State loses to Jacksonville State.
Yes, yes.
A disgrace. This is supposed to be a cupcake game. This is supposed to be a game where all the cliches apply, where you go out there, well, we had a few things to clean up, and we certainly did it, as we wiped the floor, mopped the floor with Jacksonville State. But it did not happen, so they lose that 120-17. Where does that leave you, Mike Luby Lubitz, on Norvell, who you were in love with just yesterday?
Yes, I was.
Or 2 days ago.
Friday, yeah.
And the Florida State program and the direction the program is taking.
I don't think it's any better. You're grasping at straws to find that it's better. I don't think Norvell's going anywhere. I mean, people asking for that is stupid. Like, you're not going to get rid of a coach in less than two full seasons and then have the next one be gone in less than three, especially with COVID there. So I think he's going to be there the rest of this year and all of next year. The coaching was abysmal. And what's funny to me is I give him credit for the beginning. Like, the announcers were talking about at the beginning of the game before, like, FSU struggled, that Norvell talked to them about he knows that this is the kind of game that has letdown written all over it. It was a very emotional game Sunday. It didn't get done until late Sunday night, so it's a short week. It was a loss in the end. They didn't win. No matter how much they wanted to tell themselves it felt like a win, they lost. And the nation and the country was giving them credit. So that's the kind of thing that is really hard to get kids to focus on a game like Jacksonville State. So good for him for knowing that. So you would think if a coach openly admits that, that's been drilled into his players' heads, they will treat Jacksonville State like anyone else, and they'll come out playing focused, and they'll come out playing good football. No. The play calling was atrocious. He kept trying to go down the field like they had Randy Moss when Mackenzie Milton's making his first start in over 1,000 days. When your offensive line, as recently as last year, was ranked possibly the worst in all college football, he didn't coach for the team he has. He coached for the team he hopes to have. And he let Jacksonville State hang around, which I don't understand. And by the end of it, most of FSU fans have no faith in Norvell. And I don't see any growth. I see the same issues we had with Taggart still there. A coach that is getting cute. Like, I thought that all night watching their play calling. I had you in my head. Don't get cute. Like, their run game ran over a Notre Dame defense that's good. Notre Dame's offense is their issue. Their defense is good. And they ran all over Notre Dame. But for an entire quarter, they didn't run the ball. And I'm like, what are you doing, guys? Like, why are you overthinking this? It's Jacksonville State. Just get the win, get a nice win, and move on. Like, don't install. It was like, I'm trying to think of a coach that did that, where they were trying.
It's only a four-hour show here, Libby. I mean,
you're
out of your mind on this thing.
I'm very
well, yeah. I mean, I didn't mean to, like, make you into a wind-up doll here,
fetching
about Florida State. My God. It was Jacksonville State. It's pathetic, Libby, that Florida State could come out of that Notre Dame game with all of the big, pious moral pronouncements about how what a moral victory that was, and then lose to Jacksonville State the coming week. You're supposed to clean up on that team. Supposed to win that game 63-3. Get out of here, Louie. What are you talking about? That was a disgrace. As was, I thought, most of the game against Appalachian State for the University of Miami. Can I get another one?
Oh, yeah.
Seems like the highlight of the game was that poor cat that was hanging by a claw, by a toenail, from a pawnail, I guess, from the upper deck. Did you see this thing?
No, I missed it.
Where the cat was hanging from the upper deck. An actual cat. Small cat, but not a kitten. But he's hanging from the upper deck, about to fall, and the fans catch him in the deck below in an American flag. And then held him up like they had just won the World Cup, which kind of freaked out the cat. I thought maybe the cat would die of a heart attack after being saved, but that was the highlight of the game because the Canes were falling just like that cat, only they were about to go splat against Appalachian State. Would have seen guts all over the field. It would have been disgusting as the Hurricanes looked to be, I mean, they were getting outgunned by Appalachian State. I think Joe Zagacki had to be on a Delonid drip by the end of the third quarter there just trying to get through the ballgame. Are you kidding me, Joe? What the hell was that? Manny Diaz, you got some splaining to do, Manny. Really do. No, that was ugly. They take on Michigan State. I believe that one's on the road next week. And the Canes, how bad is Michigan State? How the mighty have fallen. They're favored by 8 after two really questionable ball games. I mean, get hammered by Alabama, that's one thing. But then to nearly lose the ball game, I mean, needing a last-second field goal to pull it out against Appalachian State, I don't know that it's pathetic, but very, very dicey turf that the Hurricanes are treading on right now. The Gators, the only team that came up with a win, they had a cupcake on a schedule, but they get snapped back into reality next week as them Gators,
Alabama,
right here on 940 Wins and 1230 The Zone, will be taking on the Crimson Tide of Alabama. The ghost of the bear has been erased by Nick Saban, who brings a team to town. They'll be favored by 15 in the swamp. Holy McHubert. So, interesting weekend of college football all the way around. The local teams and the teams that seem to be the favorites here in South Florida, not exactly coming up big in week number two of the college football season. And the Manny Diaz question continues to persist. In fact, probably needs to be asked more often.
Grow, yeah.
Is he the right man for the job?
I like the guy. I don't think he is.
I like Manny Diaz. I wish it was true, but I'm watching this thing. It was scary how bad they were. It really was. Against Appalachian State. Appalachian State's big win came in 2007. I think they were pretty good for a little while after that. Didn't they score a couple of more upsets after
yes.
they beat Michigan
yes.
in the Big House?
They're fine.
That was 2007.
They showed the record. The record's good, but they're the third team member. In their conference, there's Louisiana and Coastal Carolina. So in a conference that's pretty much FCS, they're third. So, I mean.
Oh, that was ugly. There's no excuse for that. Big home game. You know, it's also a little bit freaky how people are embracing the return to full-capacity stadium crowds. And then at the same time, I mean, you're still looking at stats and horrible news about COVID-19. Is this necessarily a good development that we're packing, jamming people in the stadiums? Do you feel comfortable? Well, you don't. I know that. Going to a crowded stadium right now, I'm not sure that I'm
I go because, I mean, you went last – well, you actually, that's true. You went last year when they weren't crowded. I'd go because it's outside.
No, they did a great job with that last year. They really did.
Yeah, I mean, they've proven if you are vaccinated and you're outside, it's almost impossible. It's really hard to get COVID, so I would go, but I can understand some people not. Like, my mom is still staying away from crowds. I mean, and I understand
All right. Well, it just looks a little weird, right? Yeah. While you got Fauci on the screen there talking about, oh, yeah, watch out, and then you're seeing 100,000 people jam into a stadium, slobbering all over each other. But that was interesting. U.S. Open history, and the deal Volkswagen, the Forest Files today will address this because, wow, I mean, that was really something. How hard is it to imagine? It hasn't happened since 1969 that somebody has won the Grand Slam, and that was Rod Laver, Rocket Rod Laver, 1969. And there's Novak Djokovic, and he has a shot to do it. And he's in the final against Daniil Medvedev, a Russian who has been knocking on the door of winning a slam but hadn't won one previously, although he was playing very well in the tournament. And he takes out the Joker in straight sets. Joker just didn't have it, huh? And this is a guy, and it's almost impossible to close out, too. That was another thing we referenced in the deal Volkswagen, the Forest Files. The greatest closers of all time, I mean, the guys that are almost impossible to put away, you would have to say, what, Jordan? Kobe, maybe?
Yes.
I don't know if Kobe was as difficult
as
Djokovic.
Duncan is underrated as a closer. Duncan was really good at winning series.
Yeah. I mean, tennis, you've had a few, especially on the women's side. If you gave Steffi Graf even the slightest window of opportunity, even when she was getting, just trounced in a match, she would be able to turn that key and open the door and turn the whole thing around. Serena, same thing, almost impossible to close out. You have a lot of people in basketball. You've had boxers that were tough to close on. But Djokovic, almost impossible. Medvedev is up two breaks, and he's serving for the championship at 5-2 in the third set. He's taking the first two sets 6-4. The crowd starts getting a little bit feisty as he's serving, and he waits for a little while, ends up double faulting, loses the game when he had a championship point, then loses the next game very quickly to Djokovic, and you thought, uh-oh, here it is. If this guy comes back and wins a slam after being down 5-2 championship point in the third set and comes back and wins three straight sets, it would have been the greatest victory of all time. But it was not in the cards there, as Medvedev eventually held serve in the final service game, winning all three sets by the same 6-4 count and stopping Djokovic from making history on two fronts, winning the Grand Slam and becoming the all-time winningest slam player with 21, breaking the three-way dead heat he's in right now with Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. But great stuff there. It was a terrific tournament. And this Emma Raducanu.
Yes.
Is that how you say it?
I think Raducanu. I don't think she's Latin.
Raducanu.
Yeah, I don't think there's an
right.
N-Y.
She's like a combination of a lot of different things, you know. Filipino, born in Canada, moved to Great Britain, and is claimed as a British national.
Nice.
A British descent. Wow, how poised is this young lady, huh? Wins the qualifies to get into the draw by winning three matches, then wins seven in a row, and takes out Leyla Fernandez, stops another Cinderella story in her tracks. 6-4, 6-3 on Saturday. That was great. And did you catch the Holyfield fight?
No.
Against Vitor Belfort?
No. How did that go?
Not well for Evander. My God, how could they do that? I mean, I know they were advertising on a station, and I'm sure it was a fine event, but wow. How do you put Evander Holyfield in a ring against anybody? Even you, Luby, I would give you a shot against Evander Holyfield. I really, a 58-year-old Evander Holyfield.
That's sad.
Unless he went to the headbutts. That was always his best thing. He wasn't able to get a head on this guy. Not a head,
exactly.
But a head. Vitor Belfort, former UFC champion, who I'm not familiar with, knocked out Holyfield rather easily in the first round. All right, we're coming back with more. The Marlins need now 11 and 8. Yeah. Is it possible? Doable?
No.
They start a series against Washington tonight on the radio stations. And they lost 5-3 to the Braves yesterday. The Yankees are just tumbling out of control. Holy Brian Cashman. Is his seat going to be hotter than Ed Ogeron's?
Yes.
Cashman.
Yes.
What a collapse. This is of Cubs proportion, or the 1964 Phillies. Unbelievable the way this team has fallen apart. All right, we're coming back with more in a moment. Now that.
The time.
Appeal yourself off to Matt Monday, the ALT Depot Show presented by Destination Sport Miami. It's 6:30. All right, skating on thin ice with that. This gentleman was always on solid ground.
Oh, yay.
When he was skating around with the New York Islanders, four straight Stanley Cup championships, a remarkable accomplishment. It was one thing for the Buffalo Bills to go to four straight Super Bowls. They lost them all. This man, Brian Trottier, joins us here on the Destination Sport Miami presentation of the ALT Depot Show. Brought to you by Altitude International. We're live at Top Golf. In Doral, the launch party is on for Destination Sport Miami. A big part of it from the beginning, Brian Trottier. Brian, welcome to the program.
Well, Destination Sports, I'll tell you, it's a pleasure to be on this morning, guys. Yeah, to be able to go to win those championships, you always felt like you're going to the dance and trying to come home with the prettiest girl. And, you know, when you those creepy Oilers came along, the Edmonton Oilers and Wayne Gretzky in 94, we were right there ready to take the prettiest girl home five times, but... Not to be, you know, if you're going to lose to people, lose to great people, and they're great champions, so kudos to them. But, no, great teams, great championships, proud of those things, but doesn't happen without a team effort. And we had good teammates on that team, Dennis Potvin, Mike Bossy, Billy Smith, Clark Gillies, all Hall of Fame guys. So, you know, the credit doesn't fall on one person. We always go look at management. We say, you know, Bill Torrey and Al Arbor, our general manager and coach, it was it's a proud group of players and team, and we put kind of the – Long Island's still thanking us for putting them on the map. I said, you know what? We grew up there with you folks. You guys were kind of patient. You know, made some mistakes. Nobody booed us. You guys cheered us on. So I think it was again. I think we helped. You know, give Long Island an identity, and we just thank them for letting them be a place that we could grow up, win some championships, and be involved in their community. So no, it was. It was a great time in my life, a great time in our lives. So, yeah, thank you for bringing that up. Brought back some wonderful memories for me. Thank you.
Brian Trottier with us here on 940 Wins, 1230 The Zone, around the world on the iHeartRadio app. Nassau Coliseum, I guess this was it, huh, the swan song.
Yeah.
The Islanders returned back there for some of their games. They were playing some games in Brooklyn, but now we're going to have, and this would be good for me because I could go straight from the races at Belmont Park into the hockey game that night without having to even get on the shuttle bus, which would be great. But what kind of memories do you have about playing in front of the crowds there with those championship teams at the Nassau Coliseum?
Well, we love that old barn. The Nassau Coliseum is a special place. That we won four championships. Three of them were in that building. The place went crazy. I mean, just the atmosphere. I think it was... a reflection of how sports can grow in a little community like Long Island and, you know, just explode and become such a destination. And that Nassau Coliseum was a destination for people to voice their appreciation, their joy of hockey, and their joy of a bunch of crazy little folks from all over the world, Canada, U.S., Sweden, you name a country, and I think we had somebody represented on that team. And so, yeah, that wonderful, wonderful memories, Nassau Coliseum. And the players of today got to get a little taste of that atmosphere, that Nassau Coliseum crazy atmosphere, joy, and I hope they take that atmosphere and bring that right to Belmont and just carry that forward with the same kind of intensity, the same kind of enjoyment, and, you know, play their hearts out. And when you play your hearts out, people recognize that. And so that little Islander team right now, they're making some noise. They're deep. They're forward line deep. They're getting some great coaching. They've got Lou Lamoriello at the helm as GM, and I think they're in good hands. Young team, leadership. Barzell probably they're the face of the team, and you know, all Matthew Barzell fans, because the guy's a very dynamic little player. So I think there's good things ahead for them. They can take that right into Belmont. The wonderful memories of Nassau Coliseum, they don't die. That ghost will always be there, and I think we'll just share those wonderful memories. And whenever we can, we'll kind of have homage or whatever you want to call it to that great building. But Belmont's going to be the new home, so. It happened in Pittsburgh. It happened in Chicago. You say goodbye to the old stadiums, and you bring on the new. And by God, you know, these the championship teams that happen in these new buildings are just, they're glorious.
Brian Trottier with us here on 940 Winds, 1230 The Zone, around the world on the iHeartRadio app. Who plays, we were trying to figure this out, Barry Trotz in the movie of his lifetime. That's not going to be an easy character role to fill. I guess, you know, you could go to DeVito. but you have to find a guy with no neck and a head full of hockey knowledge, that's for sure. Now, will we ever, and you still follow the game closely, I know you're involved, with the Penguins organization?
Yes, we do a lot of community work and some corporate liaison stuff, and it's absolutely wonderful because Mario Lemieux cannot be everywhere, and Mario is a gracious person. He's a teammate of mine. We won two championships together. I coached him for another 3.5 years, and you know, Mario's one of those guys that, you know, not only a friend, but when you're a friend, you know, he's inclusive. And as an alumni and as a former teammate, he gets us involved in the community and some of the stuff that he has on. And it seems like my family is always very much appreciated and active. And, you know, so I just try to support the Penguin team as much as I possibly can. And I carry that little identity around Pittsburgh. So, yeah, no, it's been a wonderful place. And my son has finished high school, off to college, and it's me and the puppy at home now, so yeah, no, we're just enjoying our little activities with the Penguins, and what little bit they ask for, I just love jumping in.
All right, do you follow the Panthers?
We do.
The question would be, are they knocking on a door? I mean, they have that you know, sort of thing where they say, well, we lost to the eventual champions, and we gave them you know, a pretty good battle in the first round of the playoffs. Are they close, Brian Trottier, to winning a Stanley Cup, the Florida Panthers?
You know, you look at that team and you look at the youth they have, the leadership, young leadership, and they're growing, and they're going to be a team to be reckoned with, and I think that's terrific. You look down the middle, you know, captain, you look at the defense, you look at the goaltending, and you want to be strong. You want to be strong, and they're young, they're strong, they're talented, and yes. You know, climbing that ladder of success is not easy. It's hard. And, you know, everybody recognizes that. So that's when you win the championship. You would finally win that Stanley Cup. It's just so appreciated. And it's such a climb. So the appreciation factor is just like 100-fold when you get there. So, yeah, there's some disappointments. Our little Islander team had some of those disappointments. I'm sure the Penguins had some growing that they had to do. But it was wonderful to win two championships there in Pittsburgh. But when you do, the city explodes, the community explodes, and they're knocking on the door. So I wish them great success, absolutely.
We're talking with Brian Trottier here, the Destination Sport Miami launch event today. The press conference is set to kick off just after 9 o'clock. Brian, NHL legend, NHL Hall of Famer, and set
Thank
to
you.
Head of hockey, plus more when it comes to Destination Sport Miami. Talking of that team, the Penguins did, it feels like what the Panthers are trying to do. Drafted really well, got really young studs, but they didn't win exactly right away. They had some early struggles, and then they went on to winning at a ridiculous rate. Do you see any similarities with this Panthers team with that, what Sid the Kid did, Malkin, what that group did with Stahl?
God, every team you can always draw some similarities, and there's some differences, and I like that. You look at the Vegas team that would start up and this early success they've had, yeah. But they had a lot of lead time. They had 2 years to build that team through the draft. You look at the Seattle Kraken now and what they're trying to accomplish. They're trying to duplicate the kind of early success that Vegas has had. You've had some startup teams with the New York Islanders, the Edmonton Oilers, and going from WHA into the NHL. And everybody tries to, I think, copy somebody previously. The thing that I see is, like, when we were a young team and Montreal Canadiens were winning championships, we would watch them practice and how they practiced, how they conducted themselves on the ice and off the ice, how they dressed. They looked like champions. They practiced like champions. They spoke like champions. And that is the consistency that I love about the game of hockey is the Tampa Bay Lightning right now are champions. They're the Stanley Cup champions. And they are recognized right now as the elite. And how they carry themselves and how they conduct themselves and how they speak, you look at them, you say, wow, they're proud champions. Good for them. Carry that, walk proud, and they do. So I'm so proud of our hockey guys and the way they conduct themselves as champions. But there is a lot of copying going on, and there is some experiences, I think, that every team tries to draw on. But that ladder of success is always just a little different, and it's always just a little tweaked by everybody. You have your superstars, obviously. You have your goaltending. You have your coaches. You have your little ups and downs through the season, injuries. But things, when they start happening and you get on that wave, you want to ride that wave. And players feel it. Fans feel it. And when teams are knocking on the door, these young teams are knocking on the door, and they're trying to win a championship. You see St. Louis a few years ago. Yep. Finally, they won a championship.
Yep.
You look at some teams that haven't won a championship, but they're growing. They're just copying. They're kind of trying to find the identity and the group and the chemistry that can help them win a championship. And kudos to them when they do, because I'm a fan right now, and I enjoy watching hockey. And the hockey's in great shape. I mean, they're even through COVID, they managed to get Stanley Cup championships on the board. So I think everybody enjoys the sport. I'm very proud of our sport and our players that represent our little league.
How weird are goalies in
general? Well, it's been said. It's been said. They're unique is the way we look at it. No,
were you worried they were going to go postal or something? I mean,
who would think? What mind would say, yeah, I want to jump in front of that missile coming at me?
while
the rest of us are ducking for cover, yeah. These guys are blocking and jumping in front of it. I'm like, okay, you got to be a little crazy, a little special in order to make that all happen. But they're great guys, I'll tell you. Every championship team you look at has had great goaltending.
Yes.
You don't win without great goaltending. And that goaltender is a premier position. And these guys are special people because of that. So, they can be a little crazy at times. But, by God, they're, very much appreciated to a man.
Destination Sport Miami, the launch is on here. Brian Trottier, a big part of it. Brian, thanks so much. It's always a pleasure.
Pleasure, guys. Thank you. Thank you.
On the show.
Thanks for bringing your energy today. Thank you. And
thank you.
Continued successes, guys. Great.
We appreciate it, Brian.
All right, thanks a lot. Brian Trottier, ladies and gentlemen.
What kind of question is that?
What kind of a question is that?
How could you ask me a question like that?
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
It's time for today's mini trivia challenge, brought to you by the great people at Gulfstream Park. The spring-summer meet is on. They now race Thursday through Sunday. You can also place your wagers at firstbet.com. On September 12, 2008, the Marlins became the first team in Major League history to have four infielders hit 25 home runs apiece in a single season. Mike Jacobs, Dan Uggla, and Hanley Ramirez were the first three Marlin infielders to surpass 25 dingers that year. Today's challenge question is, who was that fourth infielder to do it? Was it Jorge Cantu, Gabby Sanchez, Wes Helms, or Luis Gonzalez? That answer in a moment. Be a part of the exciting thoroughbred racing at Gulfstream Park. Establish a first bet account today and get into the game. There's no greater thrill in sport than the pulsating pace and chase to the wire of the glorious racing and intense competition taking place on the track at Gulfstream Park, Hallandale Beach Boulevard, and US 1. For the latest information on dates, events, and fan access, log on to GulfstreamPark.com. Jorge Cantu hit his 25th that year in a 2-1 victory over Washington, giving the Marlins four infielders with 25 or more homers in a season, the first time it had ever been done in Major League history. That's today's mini trivia challenge, brought to you by the great people at Gulfstream Park. Place your wagers at firstbet.com for all the exciting action of Gulfstream's spring summer meet. Jason Cole on the National Football League. Terrific opening week action in the NFL. Many interesting things, including the Miami Dolphins' win over the Patriots. John Congemi dissects the game for us. Dateline Dolphins in the 9 o'clock hour. John does a great job. I made some notes on this ball game, Luby. Believe it or not, notes on a scorecard. And then about halftime, I gave up. But nonetheless, John Congemi will have the full spectrum on the Dolphins. Dateline Dolphins brought to you by Jimmy Johnson's Big Chill, mile marker 104, Key Largo. Great place to go. Can't wait to get back down there again. And once again, connect with Jimmy Johnson and the good people down there on a weekend of watching football in that sports bar. It'll be great. All right, we're coming back with more. Returning in a moment. Now that.
The time.
It's 7:03.